lesson today is taken out of the book of Exodus, part of the 15th and the 16th chapter. We left off speaking unto you last week about how that God delivered the Israelites out of the hand of the Egyptians, how that he opened the way through the sea, and how they went on dry ground through the midst of the sea, and how that the Egyptians were also drowned by the hand of God, God letting the waters come upon the Egyptians, and they sank, as Miriam says in the next chapter, like lead in the mighty waters. How wonderful was this deliverance for Israel. How thankful they were when they seen what God had done for them. And then we read that Miriam took up a timbrel, and she called on all the others likewise to sing unto the Lord for this wonderful deliverance that they had experienced. And after having this wonderful help given to them, we find that Moses, he leads the people of Israel 3 days' journey into the wilderness, and they had no water to drink. 3 days later, we find them now. In what state are they? Are they singing God's praises? Are they lifting up their voices, thanking him? No, we find them here now, very thirsty and having no water to drink. Imagine 1,200,000 people without any water to drink, and likewise with their cattle. And now we find they came to a place called Marah, and there was water. Oh, how happy they must have been when they seen this water. But when they got to this water, they found that this water was bitter, and they could not drink this water. And now we find that these people, they began to murmur and to complain unto Moses that he had brought these people out into the wilderness so that they should die of thirst. And Moses, he cried unto the Lord because he had all the people against him. And God heard his cry, and he showed him a tree. And he took this tree and he cast it into the waters. And after he had done this, the waters became sweet, and the children of Israel were enabled to drink of the waters. Now this, my hearers, is a wonderful experience again of the providence of God over these people, how good and how kind he was for them, even against all their murmurings and against all their complainings and their rebellions. God provided that they were enabled again to drink water. This experience that the Israelites had, my hearers, is likewise the experience still of the Church of Christ to this very day. These people aren't any different, if you may be of that church, than you or I. These people, they had experienced a wonderful deliverance, haven't you? Have any of my hearers been led out of Egypt of this world? Has God been so gracious unto you as to seek you out, to convict you of sin, to lay you at his feet with a cry for mercy? And has he brought you under the wings of his precious truth, and has he given you ears to hear it, a heart to receive it? And have you been given to believe at different times that truly his hand is upon you, that he is leading you, that he is good unto you? And my hearers, it may be that you have experienced something like this in your life. It may be likewise that God has blessed you providentially. He's giving you so much of this world's goods, and you may end in the Lord with what he is giving unto you. And you may also be in a thankful and a praising spirit, as the Israelites were when they came up out of the sea and they saw the Egyptians dead on the shore. Oh, there have been some amongst my hearers, I am sure. They have had marked deliverances. May it not only be spiritually, but providentially. Probably you had somebody that was sick in your family. Maybe your wife, maybe yourself, you were brought near to death's door. And it may be that God delivered you. He restored you back to health and strength. You remember that time. You remember how soft your heart was, how thankful you was to God. Just like the Israelites. And now what happened after that? What happened to these Israelites? 3 days later, they didn't have any water to drink. And what did they begin to do? They began to murmur and to complain. They began to speak against Moses. It was just as if Moses had led them out to this place. It was Moses' fault because they had no water to drink. Was it Moses' fault? No. Moses only did as God directed him to do. And now it may have been with you likewise. After having so much of the Lord's mercy and goodness revealed unto your soul, and even in a providential sense, that things began to go against you. It says here, when they came to these waters, they were bitter. May be that many things became bitter unto you. May be that you, as I've just said, became so sick you was brought to death's door. Even people began to despair. Maybe your wife, your husband, your children began to despair whether you would live. Maybe your life would be taken away. Oh, this is a bitter thing to experience, my hearers. If you never did, be thankful that you didn't. Oh, the bitterness of such an experience. Some of my hearers know this. Oh, they are bitter things in life. It's not always sweetness, but they're mixed, my hearers, the bitters with the sweet. May be likewise that spiritually you have come up to the house of God Sunday after Sunday, and all the word was so sweet. Oh, it was so good to be in the house of God. You wished that it was every day Sunday. You wished that the word of God would always be preached and always be read, and you could always be there. But there came a time not too long after that, that when you came up to the house of God, it was entirely different. Nothing touched you. Nothing affected you. In fact, the word was against you. The word began to discover unto you your sins, your lost state, your condition. Began to discover unto you your unbelief. Began to discover unto you what you were and what you have become in Adam. And all this discovering spirit, my hearer, oh, it brings us in a state where we begin what? We begin to write bitter things against ourselves. Oh, we begin to say, that couldn't be the grace of God that came to my heart. That couldn't have been the work of God that I experienced. Oh, we begin to search and to examine what we have experienced. And oh, it all appears to be wrong. Sometimes we say inwardly, oh, I wish I never had said anything about it. I wish I had never disclosed what was going on in me. Oh, I've only kept my mouth shut. But now I've made a profession. People think that I'm a child of God. I've said something like that. And oh, what am I now? Well, these are bitter things, my hearers, to experience. Oh, how bitter it is for a soul to think that it's lost, that it's undone, that there's no hope for it anymore. And now, my hearers, what happened? And Moses, he cried unto the Lord. May I ask you, do you do that? Do you cry unto the Lord? No cry to him? How sad is your condition? You don't need God. Oh, it's a blessing, my hearers, if God has put a cry into your soul. Oh, Moses cried to him because everybody was up against him, and God heard his cry. Has God never heard your cry? Has he never answered you? Have you any answer to prayer? If you have, my hearers, how wonderful it is. It's a token that God has mercy in store for you, that God is favorable towards you. You can't believe it sometimes. You've probably had a marked instance in your life that you could truly say that God heard you. He answered you. And you can go back to that place. But after a while, it seems as if the sweetness and the faith that you had concerning that is all gone. You can't believe anymore. All my hearers. Now this man, Moses, He was a mediator between God and these people. He's a type of the Lord Jesus Christ. And he was given so many answers to prayer. I don't know if you, my hearers, ever read much about Moses, but I've envied Moses so much. You know why? Because he lived so close to God. He talked with God as he talked with his friend, and God answered him so often. You know, there isn't a better, there isn't a sweeter life on earth to live than to live close to God, to have God's ear, to have God answer you, to God help you. Now, this is what Moses experienced, my hearers. And what did the Lord show him? He showed him a tree. This tree didn't have any value in it. It didn't have anything in it that would make the water sweet. It was just a miracle on God's part. Moses took this tree and cast it into the waters, and they became sweet. Oh, my hearers, there may be some of you that are passing through bitter things in this life. Everything may be against you. And inwardly, likewise, there's so many enemies telling you that everything's wrong, that you deceived yourself, that you're not on the narrow way, that you better not believe anymore that you're going to heaven because your life shows it to you that it's not so. And all these are bitter things when you have these things coming up in you. And my hearers, there may be some of you that are having even bitter things providentially. Things seem to go against you. Your wife got sick, your husband got sick. They don't seem to be able anymore even to provide for the family. All things go against us in this life. You're going to experience that, young people. You know life is before you and think life is so wonderful, but life has its trials. It has its troubles. It has its tribulations. And when we get into these things, my hearers, they aren't so sweet. But what a blessing it is if you have a God to cry to, if you have a God to go to. I may say there isn't a better thing for a person to have than to have God as his refuge in all his troubles and all his trials and all his tribulations that he passes through in this life. And my hearers, you may be in the depths of sorrow. You may be in the depths of misery. You may have so many bitter things against you. But if God in his infinite mercy should show you this tree that Moses was given to see and was given to take and cast into the waters, I am sure that all the bitterness that you are experiencing will be sweet. How could that be, you say? Let me explain it a little bit, as the Lord may help me. If God gives you to see Jesus Christ, who is the tree of life, if you are given to see how he came into this world and how so many bitter things he experienced. All my hearers, everybody seemed to be against him. All the people were opposed to him. The law of God came out against him and took him by the throat and demanded payment of him. The justice of God unsheathed its sword and said, "Smite my fellow." Now this precious Jesus was taken by wicked hands. All what they didn't do to him, they ridiculed him, they spit at him, they slapped him in the face, they crowned him with thorns. My hearers, if God take you by hand and lead you to follow this precious Jesus, amidst all your bitterness, there will be such sweetness in looking upon this precious Christ. You will say, whatever I am passing through is nothing in comparison to what he passed through. He was taken and he was nailed upon the tree. He was crucified. And why did he experience all this bitterness, my hearers? So that we, who are his people, when we are in bitter pathways, may receive some sweetness from him. Oh, it's good to follow this precious Jesus. He is the tree of life. And from him these fruits descend into the souls of his dear children. And my hearers, in this life, it's not always bitterness. Oh no. There are times that God's people experience much sweetness, much love, much mercy, much favor of God. And we find that after they had been to these waters, and then we find that they likewise traveled again. And they came to a place called Elam. Now, this place was a wonderful place in the desert. You know, in the desert, in the wilderness, not much grows. Not much corn or fruit or anything that's sustaining for our lives. But there's a lot of herbage. A lot of the deserts, they have good grazing grounds for cattle. And this particular desert that the Israelites are traveling through was in Arabia. In the land of Canaan, there were many deserts likewise. Outside of each town, there was a desert. Some were good, some were barren, some there was nothing in it. And now they came to a place in the midst of this Arabian desert called Elam. Here, there were 12 fountains of water, 12 wells of water, and 70 palm trees, like an oasis in the midst of the desert. Oh, I can imagine these people, when they came to this place, they said, oh, what a lovely place this is. Let's stay here. Let's camp here. Let's remain here. Such a wonderful place. They could all shelter themselves under the palm trees from the burning tropical sun, and there was a well of water for each tribe. They didn't have to fight about the water. There was 12 wells, and there was 12 tribes of the children of Israel. And they all had plenty of water to drink. And they were given to rest and be content at this place. Now these 12 wells of water, they typified likewise the 12 tribes of Israel. And the 70 palm trees, they typified the 70 elders of the Israelites. They likewise typified the 12 apostles of our Lord Jesus Christ, and typified the 70 disciples that were sent out by Christ to preach his word. And my hearers, this place, Elam, spiritually, that we would say is the house of God. There we may believe that God has his servants, his ministers, and there they proclaim the precious gospel of Jesus Christ. And there, my hearers, a fruit is to be found for the immortal souls of his dear children. How wonderful it is that we yet as a congregation have an Elam, my hearers, that we yet may come up to the house of God. And although we do not have a servant, we do not have a minister, we still have his precious word amongst us, the truth as it is in Jesus. And truly some of you will testify that when you do come up sometimes, you do find the word to be refreshing to your soul. It meets your case. It explains your condition. It gives you a little hope. It gives you a little courage. It gives you a little faith. It gives you sometimes communion and fellowship with God. Isn't that a wonderful thing? To find in the midst of this world in which we are living and through which we are traveling an oasis, a place where we may resort to, a place where sometimes we come so despondent, so cast down, because of the way, and when we come there, we find that God meets with us, that God communes with us, that God gives us to see and to believe that he knows the way we're traveling. He knows what's going on in our hearts, and it's explained so clearly and so plainly from the pulpit. What goes on in the inner chamber is proclaimed from the housetops. And oh, that's such a blessed time for a soul. You ever have a time like that? You remember such times in your life? They're what we would call spiritually elums. Oh, they're such wonderful places, my hymns. If you never had such a place in your life, I feel sorry for you. I do, honestly. That God has sent his word, sent his servants, and you have never partaken of one crumb of it. Oh, what a miserable life you are leading, my hearers. I know you can't change yourself. I know you can't make this house of God and his word an Elam for yourselves. But I do know that God can do wonders. And I would entreat you, my hearers, to come up as often as you possibly can. You never know what may fall from the lips of one of our servants, or even from a sermon that might affect your soul. It may just meet your taste. It may just speak home to your heart. You only need one word from God, and you'll never forget that word. Oh, what a wonderful thing it would be if God would again arise amongst us and speak in this way. And then you likewise would have such a desire to remain in the house of God. And you would have the desire of the psalmist who said that he would live all the days of his life in the house of the Lord, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. Do you love the house of God? I know if you never had anything in the house of God, you never were fed and never were nourished, you may like the building, you may like the appearance of it, you may like the people that attend here, but do you like the truth that is proclaimed from the council? Has it any effect upon your soul? For that's what you come for. That's what you listen to. And if it has no effect upon you, then you may love the outward things that are in the house of God, but you know nothing of the kernel of the matter. Oh, may God give you someday to experience such a delight for his house. May you experience a spiritual Elam, that you may go back to it in your life and say then and then, oh, it was so wonderful. I found so much rest and so much contentment and so much peace under the hearing of the precious truths that I was sitting under. And my hearers, these people, they would have gladly remained in this place. But you see, they were on the march, these people, towards the land of Canaan. Are you on the march? Are you journeying to that heavenly Canaan? And you will find likewise, like the Israelites, that then you will be in a spot where there will be nothing else but bitterness. And then you'll come to a spot again where there's a spiritual Elam. And they were commanded again to move from this place. And they came into the wilderness of Sin. And they were commanded by God then to turn back to the Red Sea. God did this with a purpose. God carried them back to that spot where he had brought them through the Red Sea on dry ground. Has God ever brought you back, my hearers, to some of the places where he met with you in your life, where he dealt with you, where he was gracious to you? God does that so that we would esteem the mercies that he has shown to us in the past, and that we would remember him and put our trust in him and rely upon him for the future. And that's what God did with these people. He brought them back into the wilderness of Sin alongside of the Red Sea. And now what do we find these people complaining about again? You know, the more that you read about these people, they did nothing but murmur and complain. You do that? Are you always satisfied and contented with your lot? You never murmur and complain? And you're not like the Israelites. I would say you're not like human beings, because it's natural for us to murmur and complain. One does it more than another. I agree with you. One has a more peaceable nature and friendly nature than another person. Some are always grumbling. Some are always complaining, we say. But if we examine ourselves and our own hearts, we will find that we often do it too. And that's what we find these people again doing. Here they are, traveling to Canaan, and it's about a month and a half so that they're out of the land of Egypt. It seems that they took provision along for about a month. And now on the 15th day of the second month, they haven't got anything to eat. They're hungry. First they were thirsty, now we find them being hungry, not having anything to eat. And they come to Moses. It seems Moses seems to be the target for these people. And they said unto Moses, "Why did you bring us out into this wilderness? To die here? It would have been better had we died in the land of Egypt. We remember when we were in Egypt that we sat by the flesh pots and we had bread to the full to eat. And now we are in this wilderness and we have nothing to eat." Was this true? Surely, maybe they didn't have any bread more to eat and didn't have any more provisions left. But didn't they have plenty of herds and cattle with them? Couldn't they have slain them and eat them if they were hungry? Murmurers and complainers many times, they complain when they got plenty with them yet. These people likewise, they had plenty yet to eat, but they're complaining because they don't have any bread to eat. And they stood up against Moses and against Aaron, and they said, "Would to God that we had died in the land of Egypt." In other words, they would have rather remained in Egypt and have died under one of the plagues that God had brought upon the Egyptians. Now, these people were in a sad and a complaining and a murmuring state at this time. Nothing to eat. How was God going to feed such a multitude of people? Here they were in this wilderness, and they see nothing before them but death. And this, they thought, would soon overtake them. You see, in these people, they had no faith in God. They didn't remember the deliverance that God had given them. They didn't remember the water that he gave them to drink. Now they don't have anything to eat. You would think that they would put their trust in this God and rely that he sure would feed them. He didn't lead these 1,200,000 people out in the wilderness to slay them. And this is what they thought. And this is what they complained about. You see, my hearers, what unbelief does. It does not bring us to God, but it brings us to the things that we see which are opposed to us, and we complain and murmur. And now God, in his mercy and in his love, he had brought these people out, and they were his chosen people, and he wasn't going to leave these people starve in the wilderness. Even against all their murmurings and all their complainings, although he got angry with them, and he commanded Moses and Aaron to bring the people out to him, and he descended in a cloud, still he promised Moses that he would give these people bread to eat. He promised that he would feed this multitude of people. And now they were commanded by Moses that the next morning they would see the glory of God, and they would see and believe that God had led them out of Egypt. Against all what they complained about. And God was going to rain bread down from heaven. And then they were to gather this bread every day, a certain measure of it. And upon the sixth day, they were to gather a double portion of it. And they were not to go out on the seventh day to gather any. And they were only to gather enough for each day. They were not to leave anything for the next day. This God commanded them by the word of Moses. And now, my hearers, it pleased God to let dew come down from heaven and rest upon the ground. And when the dew went up the next morning, there was laying upon the ground a small kernel, it says, like the coriander seed, white as snow. And the people went out and gathered it together, and they gathered an omer full, as much as they needed. Some gathered more and some gathered less. And when they had partaken of it, there was none left. Some of them kept some of it, but it bred worms and it began to stink. Every day they had to go out for this manna. Now, this was the commandment of God. And on the sixth day they went out and gathered a double portion of it. And then on the seventh day they partook of the double portion. There were no worms in it. It did not stink. Notice, my hearers, it was a miraculous feeding from God towards these people. Now, this was something wonderful. It says in the Bible that man ate angels' food. And not just for 1 week or 2 weeks, but 40 years long, this miracle took place every day except the seventh day. How wonderful were these people given to see that God was with them. He gave them to see by day a cloud that he was in the front of them, and at night there was a pillar of fire, and they could see in this that God was in their midst. And now every day he fed them from heaven with manna. And still we find these people murmuring and complaining, dissatisfied with that God who went before them and who led them. And this manna, my hearers, was a type of the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. He is the true manna. He is the true living bread of life. For he himself has said, except ye eat the bread and drink the blood of the Son of Man, the body of the Son of Man, and the blood of the Son of Man, ye have no life in you. I am the bread of life, he says at one time. This then was revealed in this manner that God let down to the Israelites. They had no concern anymore about bread. It was given to them every day. How wonderful then was this for these people, the Israelites. And this manna, my hearers, came down every day. And on the sixth day, they got twice as much as any other day. Have you ever been jealous of these people? May I ask you, you who have spiritual life, when was the last time that you partook of some manna? When was it that God let down something from heaven into your soul? Some, I guess, have to go back many years and say, then and then, when I was so hungry, when I didn't have anything more to eat, and I thought I was going to starve, and I thought it was a lost matter with my soul, then he let down a crumb from heaven. You remember that time? Oh, wasn't that crumb sweet? Oh, wasn't it good for your soul? You know, you read of Elijah that he went 40 days on what God had fed him with. Maybe you went more than that. Maybe you went longer than that. But maybe now you're again in such a famishing condition, and you're so hungry, and you're longing again for a little spiritual manna to come down from heaven. Oh, how blessed it is, my hearers, that we have such a hunger. You know, everybody don't have that spiritual hunger. There are many of my hearers that know nothing about being hungry and thirsty as these Israelites were. Oh, what a mercy it is that God has implanted in your heart something that hungers and thirsts after the living God. You can't just be satisfied with these trifling things. You're not satisfied just with the means of grace, but you want something from him who has instituted the means for the purpose of feeding his people. And you come up at times to be nourished, to be encouraged, and to be strengthened in faith. And it pleases God at times to give you to partake of this heavenly manna. All my hearers, aren't these people to be jealous of? Every day they got some. Maybe you remember a time that you got something almost every day. You know, when God begins a good work of grace in a person's heart, that's such a wonderful time. I'm afraid there aren't too many people that understand what I talk about. You know, I experienced this, and therefore I can relate that. And I do relate this for the encouragement of God's dear children, for there are some that have experienced this in like manner. When God first takes a person in hand and sheds his love abroad in his soul and brings him under the means of grace, why, my hearers, it just seems like if heaven's open and every day he gets something. Oh, he enjoys so much of the love and of the favor of God. You ever experience anything like that? God don't deal all the time with his people this way, but you do read in the Word of God of a time of first love. And that's such a wonderful time. It lasts sometimes only a week, sometimes 2 weeks with some. Sometimes it lasts a little longer. But with myself, I may say it lasted about 2 years. Maybe I was an exception. But oh, it was such a wonderful time, my hearers. You never can forget that time. And all manner came down. Every time you came to the house of God, you had something. You had something on the psalter. You had something on the... on what was being read, you had something also when prayer was offered up. Oh, you joined so in union with the person that led in prayer. Oh, it was so good to draw nigh to God. The person just poured out his heart before God, just as you would do. And you said, oh, I wish that person would always lead in prayer. He knows how to pray much better than I do. That's the way it is when you're so alive by the things of God. And then when the sermon is read or is preached, oh, the ears are so open, the heart is so open, you're listening so. You know something about that? You never had that before, did you? When you followed the paths of sin and you delighted yourself in the things of this world, you come up to the house of God, what did you do? You sat like this maybe, you were uninterested, you had nothing under it. It was all Greek to you. I know, I was that way myself. But I'm telling you about a time when God comes, when he opens your ears, when he opens your heart, when he brings the word home with sweetness and with faith into your soul. Why, my hearers, you can never forget those times. I don't care how dark it may become and how dead it may become in your soul. You always can go back to that time and say, oh, it was so different then. I wish it was like that now. You wish it was? I do. Oh, I often wish that I was as in the former days, when God shined down upon my heart, and when I dwelt in his countenance and walked with him and talked with him. All them at a time when that spiritual manna is given unto those souls almost every day, almost ever under every sermon they enjoy something. And that is the way it went with these people. 40 years they went in this wilderness, and 40 years they had tokens of God's manifested presence amongst them. And you know, my hearers, I often think we're so blind and so stupid that we have so many tokens of God's presence in our daily life, but we don't have eyes to see it and we don't have a heart to acknowledge him for it. We're so forgetful of that good God in heaven above. All that we would have more, our eyes open to see this. And then we would live more closer to God and enjoy more of his presence and of his love and of his favor in our hearts. My hearers, my time is gone. I never thought that I would be able to talk as much as I did. You know, I had no time to study my lesson. I only studied, I would say, just a little part of it. And I come up to this house pretty burdened, my hearers. You know, I have a custom of running through my lesson and going over every text practically in it trying to suck some sweetness out of it, hoping that God would use it for your comfort and for your edification. But as you know, I had no time this past week. But you know, sometimes when you come with an empty bucket, it pleases God to fill it. And if God has dropped something into your heart and given you to taste something of what I've been speaking about this afternoon, thank Him for it, not me, because it came from Him. And that's all for today, my hearers.